One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
You're listening to the GAA Hour with Darren O'Sullivan on Sports Joe.
Hi there, you're very welcome along to the GAA Hour with me, Darren O'Sullivan. Yet again, we have absolutely loads of GAA action to talk about this weekend. I'm delighted to be joined by my usual partner in crime, Eamon McGee. And for the first time, Mayo's Keith Higgins is joining us remotely. How are we doing, boys? Eamon, you all packed for New York? Speedos, Factor 50?
Ready to go, ready to go. Darren, it's good to get a wee bit of GAA chat before we head. There's just no parenting, no GAA chat, and it's just all about the holidays next week.
Ah, sure. Jesus, you'll be fresh next weekend, so when you're rejoining us.
Don't know if I'll be fresh now, but I'll be there anyway.
And I'm delighted to welcome for the first time Mayo's Keith Higgins, a man I'd plenty battled with over the years. Thanks for joining me, Keith. How are things?
All good, Darren. Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. I suppose this is the first time I'd have to say I'd be happy to see you.
Yeah, likewise, I think, at this stage. But you're still playing away and you had a great win with the Hurlers over the weekend.
Yeah, still tipping away with the Hurling. Played Sligo there on Saturday. So good win now. We kind of took us a while to get going, but pulled it out of the bag in the second half now. So we'll just tease things up nicely for us now for the last game against Derry.
Yeah, you don't have much rest out again next weekend. We're saying it's kind of like a semi-final, I suppose.
Yeah, basically, I suppose it's the last round of the group stages, but ultimately, it's kind of the winner. This will go through to Kildare in the finals. So I suppose it's as good as a semi-final. So, yeah, look, it is kind of fairly hectic games week on week, but in a way, it's good. It's just once you get a few wins, you get that momentum. I suppose it's easier to keep it going.
Yeah, and I was always keen to know, like, obviously you retired from the footballers, but you didn't leave the county scene. You went straight into the hurlers. I was always keen to know, and I know you knew the hurling setup anyway. How was the transition going from the footballers straight into the hurlers full time?
Yeah, look, it was fine. Like I said there, I'd been involved with the hurlers for a lot over the last 15 years, even when I was playing the football. But I suppose it was fine last year once I kind of finished up back in January. I think the season didn't kick off probably till March or April just with COVID. It was a delayed start to the season. So I kind of had a few weeks or a few months to kind of get my head around not being paired to football. And then it was straight in. It was just flat out then once we started back with the league. It was week on week and the same then with the championship. So didn't have really too much time to think about it. But yeah, look, it's good to get back in. It was good to have something to keep you busy.
Yeah, it's always, I actually found that as well when I left the setup. It takes a couple of months to get your head around it, that you're actually out of the loop when you've been part of it for so long. And like, I suppose Kerry and Cork the weekend, and I know you're a United man as well, and Roy Keane was in the crowd. I'm presuming he's the reason why they're showing so much fight and determination. Did you notice him?
Yeah, I just saw the clip of it shown on the television. All right, yeah, and I'm sure, I doubt the Cork boys were aware of it now, but yeah, it was good to see him at the game. You know, I would have grown up when United were probably at the peak of their powers, and he was the main man for them. So yeah, I would have great good time for Roy. I know he can divide opinion at times, but yeah, definitely a big fan of him.
No, I'd be in the same boat as that. Grew up watching and idolising Keane, and still a big fan of his as well. So look, I suppose we've only the hour. Again, like I said, there was a lot of action. We're going to start down in Munster, Cork versus Kerry. And I suppose the last couple of weeks, we haven't given it a whole pile of air time because I suppose we were all kind of saying foregone conclusion, Cork aren't going well, Kerry have been built up. No, it finished with a strong performance by Kerry and a big win. But there was definitely positives for Cork game, and what do you make of the game?
Listen, it kind of went the way that most of us would have said it was going to go. Cork were going, because Cork are a proud football and like they're a proud sporting county. And you know, of course they're going to show a bit of resistance, a bit of fight. Everybody, you know, says they were in the doldrums, and you know, if you're just looking at that game, they're going to show a bit of resistance, and then just the quality of Kerry showing through. And without Kerry, you know, really getting into them higher gears, they just got over, got the job done, and it's just, you know, move on now.
Yeah, I think that kind of sums it up. Keith, I don't know, did you see the Sunday game? I think Sean Kavanagh, I thought it was strange comments. I thought it was a bit unfair. He was very dismissive of Cork. I didn't actually think there was any need, because like that, a lot of counties do go through bad spells, and Cork are in the middle of one. But I, like, trying to look at it from a neutral point of view, was absolutely delighted with their performance. Obviously, had Roy Keane in the crowd as well, so maybe that's the minimum requirement was a bit of work rate and effort and stuff. And I genuinely felt it was just Kerry's extra strength and conditioning in the last 15, 20 minutes and experience that tipped it their way.
Yeah. Look, if I was a Cork person, I suppose I wouldn't have been happy with Kavanagh's comments either. Like I said, they were very dismissive. But at the same time, I've kind of found myself watching the game nearly a bit frustrated from a Cork point of view. You know, I thought they showed glimpses of that bit of fight and that bit of work rate that you'd expect. But at the same time, I just felt like they could nearly have done a small bit more. Now, I know from 50 minutes on, like you said, Kerry's conditioning completely kind of overshone them. Like, the Cork kick-out was just, second half, we would just lump everything out the middle and they got completely overran there. And it was just, Kerry had all the ball and they just completely overran them, you know, and they were creating scores so much easier. But especially in the first half, I thought, again, they were probably running down blind alleyways for the first 50 minutes, but once they kind of got a grip on things, you know, they kicked some good scores. I know Sherlock got 6 out of 7 of their first 7 scores, but they were doing okay, like, and you were happy enough with things, but it just felt there was a bit more in them, you know. I just thought if they had a bit more confidence in themselves, if they actually pushed on a small bit more, they could have caused a few more problems, because a few times they ran at Kerry, they did cause them problems, got a few frees. Now, I don't know, was that down to a bit of Kerry complacency as well? But yeah, like, there was some bits you'd be happy about, but just for me watching it from a Cork point of view, it was just a small bit frustrated at times. I thought there was a small bit more in them.
Yeah, and look, we've all played against strong Cork teams, so we kind of know what they're capable of. And it, like, we know with this team, even though they're not playing, they haven't been playing well, they have good footballers. And I think, Keith, you hit the nail on the head there with confidence. And that's what this team has been lacking an awful lot of them, and they're lacking confidence, a lack of belief. But for me, I never felt they were ever going to win the game. I don't think anyone did, but it was about showing something. And I think they showed enough that they should leave that game with a lot of confidence and, look, try and get a win in the qualifiers. Hopefully, for their sake, they don't get a Mayo or a Tyrone and they can have a good crack at it. But I think for showing signs going forward, Eamon, they have to be happy with that, and hopefully the supporters will get behind them, because, to be fair, they don't get much love in Cork, the footballers.
And that's the thing, you know, they've just got to keep trying. They've got to keep at it. You'd know more than me about, are they doing the right things? Is the structures there? Is the underage set up there? And like, will we see Cork get back to, you know, the place that they deserve to be and the place that they should be when you look at it, the county like that? So that's the question. And it's about this group. We know they're not going to, you know, be in the latter stage of the championship, but it's up to them just to hold the torch now and just try and get that crop coming through, whatever's been done in it. And, you know, you made a comment there about conditioning. Like, conditioning shouldn't come into it for a Division 1, Division 2 thing. You know, I think it's just purely down to belief and the fact that so much has been said about this Cork team. And, you know, doesn't matter who you are, what type of footballer, that's going to seep into you. And when Kerry are getting the top, you know that Cork probably just didn't really believe that they could beat Kerry.
Yeah, and I suppose when it comes to the, when I'm on about conditioning, you'd see their bench. They were very young,
I get
very inexperienced. And my thing is, like, a lot of these Kerry boys have been with Jason McGahan down in Kerry for the last number of years doing the SSC, they're just a bit further along. Mm-hmm. But I suppose from a positive from Cork, seeing Sean Poulter back in action, Keith, was good. He has a bit of everything about him. He has the pace, he has tenacity, he's not afraid. He took a lot of heavy hits the last day, which from a Kerry point of view, they were very physical. Borderline, probably should have had a few frees given against him. They were late enough, but it was actually unusual to see Kerry dictating the physicality of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was kind of the one thing that stood out even in the early stage of the game. You know, Cork were trying to carry the ball out of defence and the Kerry forwards looked like they just wanted to get tackles in and wanted to make hits. And, you know, on another day, another referee might have given a lot of frees in them circumstances. But that was kind of one thing that stood out for me was, and it's probably very un-Kerry-like if you don't mind me saying, whatever Jack O'Connor has done or whatever way he's got into the heads of these boys, they just look like they want to go out and tackle. And sometimes that's just a change of mindset, you know. I know James had something similar with us when he came in first in 2011. It was just like, he changed the attitude of the boys looking like they actually want to go out and win the ball back, you know. And Kerry forward seemed to be kind of doing that way. We saw Stephen O'Brien, I think, kind of was very active or very vocal. I think when they got a few turnovers, you know, it was kind of reminding you sometimes of watching the hurling boys and they win a free and giving the fist bumps the odd time. So that seems to be a big difference in them this year, whether that's, like I said, Jack or that's Paddy Talley, I don't know. But it's definitely something that's kind of added from this year. And I know there's been a lot of talk about it as well, but I thought it was very evident at stages the last day.
Yeah, no, I was the same. It was the one thing that stood out from the very start was how physical Kerry were, and you said it there yourself. Kerry actually looked like they want to defend, they want to tackle at the moment. I suppose we mentioned conditioning, what's the point in all the weights and all the strength training if we're not going to use it, but they do look like a team that want to put their body in there and show their physical strength. And I suppose we mentioned the kickouts, and look, it did get Cork into a lot of trouble, and obviously losing Micheál Martin early in the game, and I know one of their other goalies, Chris Kelly's out injured, so look, it probably wasn't something they were expecting. And I was just looking from a Cork point of view, like you mentioned it there, Keith, that Kerry forwards looked like they wanted to tackle, they wanted to make contact, and around the middle they are very big now. Eamon, what would you do in that scenario if you're the goalie, if you're the defender, and you're finding it hard to get out from the back, and so you don't want to go short with the kickouts, but you can't really go long because Kerry are dominating out there. It is a tough one, and like that, Micheál Martin went off, did the sub goalie in. It's a difficult position for them to be in like that. The goalie wasn't experienced, so I felt bad for him at times, but it's a difficult one for him.
Yeah, and like, you know, we talk about this so much in the modern game about kickouts. There's so much emphasis on the kickouts. You know, It's not just the keeper. There's an emphasis on the players out the field. There's an emphasis on the plan, the kickout plan you have. And if it's not good enough, you know, it's going to get broken down because there's so much emphasis on the press, and you know, most teams are going towards a zonal press. So you need to have, the keeper needs to be working and needs to have something in the locker to get out of that. And it just looked that it just they didn't have something sufficient. It was fairly basic, and you know, basic in the modern game is just not good enough.
Yeah,
I think that was the big thing there. Sorry, Darren.
No, carry on.
Like the defenders didn't look like they wanted to show for a short kick out. Like, you know, anytime you saw that kind of clip from behind the goal, there was no movement, there was no options for him, whether it was Micheál Martin, the subkeeper that came in, like he didn't have options. It was just literally a case that they were expecting him just to kick it long. And once Kerry kind of started dominating, I mean, you talk about conditioning, but when you're defending all the time, you're going to tire a lot quicker. So it just kind of all played its part. But, you know, I don't think, maybe they just thought they were making it easier on that keeper that came in, the young guy, and just to kind of just attempt to boot it out as long as he could, but they just didn't look like they had anyone wanting to get on the ball in defence.
Yeah, like I suppose their performance was really based on heart and pride and effort and go for as long and hard as you can without any major tactics. I suppose it was mostly about containment more than winning the game and probably trying to keep the score down as low as possible, which, look, I suppose it was understandable, even though it's not what you want to see or what you'd expect from Cork teams of old. But I suppose the one positive, they kept David Clifford fairly quiet, and I suppose we're hearing for a long time that Kerry are a one-man team. But I think David's going to have to get used to that there, Keith. Look, you would have obviously been in the full back line as well as Eamon, and it's going to be that way for him. You slow Kerry down by getting bodies back. He's going to have to deal with having not only one, but two and three defenders tracking every move, and it's going to be a case of how he can influence the game, sometimes without even touching the ball.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was a Flav that was on him again on Saturday evening. And, you know, again, did very well. We mentioned Powter there, kind of was playing right in front of him. You know, he wasn't kind of playing that sweeper role where sometimes you might play 30 yards out from goal or depending on where the ball was. He was literally just kind of standing kind of 5 or 10 yards in front of Clifford, wherever he was. So they weren't looking to get, didn't give the option, I suppose, for Kerry to get much quality ball into him. But like I said, he's going to have to get used to that. I think, you know, we've seen last year in the semi-final against Tyrone, I think Tyrone were kind of double team as well, but he still kicked 9 points in that game. So it's there for him, or, you know, it's in the locker when he wants to do it. But I think it's, you know, again, all the talk really is Clifford in that forward line, but I think Sean O'Shea is probably right up there with him as one of the most important players in that Kerry forward line. I think he's averaging 6 or 7 points a game. I know a lot are from frees, but he just seems to have that ability to turn it on as well when he needs to. So look, from a David Clifford point of view, you know, he'll turn it on, I think, when he really needs to turn it on. I think the last year they probably knew that we're going to come through it. So, but look, he'll learn as well. Like, he's still a young player. Like, he'll learn as well, kind of. He'll get smarter. Like, he'll know where the spaces are. He'll know when to pull out, make room for everyone else. And he's probably doing that already, but, you know, he's still so young. He'll get better as it goes on.
Yeah, and like you mentioned Sean O'Shea there, Eamon. Like, I think down in Kerry, we're actually taking Sean O'Shea for granted in terms of his ability, because there's so much talk about David. And you're asked after the game, I chatted to a fellow who didn't see it and who played well. And I said, oh, Sean, he did okay. And I was like, well, he kicked 10 points, 2 or 3 from play. And I'm saying he did okay. And he's another man, like Keith said there. He loves tackling. He works like a dog. He does everything. Really solid bloke. Just loves the football.
Yeah.
And you're hearing about David Clifford, one-man team, but Sean O'Shea is up there with him, and he's just probably not getting the recognition just yet, but not that he's not getting it, just he's not being talked about in the same way as David.
Yeah, and it's something I noticed there last year, and he seems to be vocal. You know, he's still relatively young, and, you know, he seems to be a bit of a leader in that group, which is something that I was surprised at. But for, like, Tomás O'Shea earmarked Sean O'Shea, is like, he's going to be as good, you know, he's a different type of player than Clifford, but he, you know, he's going to be as influential, as important to Kerry if they're going to be winning medals. From, like, Tomás has said that from a long way out. And you're right, we take him totally for granted because there's such a big kind of a big target, or whatever way you want to phrase it, on David Clifford. But, you know, if Kerry are going to win that All-Ireland, or, you know, win multiple All-Irelands in the next few years, Sean O'Shea is going to be central to that.
Yeah, and I suppose I did him in justice there. I said he got 10 points. I think he got 11. So, sorry, Sean, I took a point off you there. But I suppose coming down the stretch, it was Kerry's experience that got him over the line. Paul Ganey, who I was surprised didn't start the game, but the way the game panned out, he was probably better off that he didn't start, because there wasn't much ball going into the full forward line. And when he did come on, the game was a bit stretched. And I always felt his experience coming on, he delayed a pass, most pass he got by half a second or a second, just to give the forwards around him a chance to get in a more forward position. So instead of a lateral pass, he'd wait that extra half a second or a second for an extra run to be made. So instead of me facing up the man, I was on the run getting it. I just thought his experience there, his ability to bring other players into the game and just see spaces was key. And obviously, look, David Moran came on there on the middle, and he did what he does as well as anyone in the county. He caught high ball, Keith, and I thought that experience was just key. And it was another bit of a killer blow for Cork, who had done so well. And then you see these kind of marquee names coming on. It's a case of where I've worked my arse off here for 50, 60 minutes, and there's better players coming on even now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think probably that's part of Jack's thinking as well. You know, you keep those boys there, and Paul Murphy as well, in reserve to come on. And look, as Eamon knows, you're a cornerback, and you're in there in 50 minutes into the game. You see, I know we had it for years with Dublin, you like the Kevin McMenamin, these boys coming on, it nearly deflates you for 50 minutes. No, he's going to go all over the pitch again. But I think, and look, I could be completely wrong here, but I think you look at the way Kerry want to play, and it is a very kind of, I suppose, high tempo game with looking to get the tackles in, looking to burst from defence with pace. You'd wonder, are they thinking that that type of game mightn't suit the likes of Ganey and suit the likes of David Moran for 50, 60 minutes? So bring them on maybe when the game is settled. Well, it's going to settle down with the last 20, when you might need a David Moran to hold around the middle, win your kickouts, And then when that bit of space is created up front, you'll have the likes of Gini to come on as well. So maybe it's just the way Jack is thinking that the type of game they want to play just wouldn't suit those boys if they were to start.
Yeah, and that's true. And like, I suppose the game is so dynamic now and it's so athletic. It is a case that if things aren't going well, you do need the older heads, the camera heads, to be coming onto the pitch instead of coming off the pitch. And I think that probably will be the way that Kerry go. Eamon, Keith mentioned Kevin McMenamin. Did you have anyone above in Donegal that was always better suited to coming off the bench than starting?
Yeah, you know, he'll give out to me, and as Keith knows him well, as Christy Toy would have been a great impact sub for us. And even player, don't know if you're familiar with Martin McElhinney, used to give us an awful lift. Yeah. And, you know, Christy was a bit of a fan favourite. We used to take a wild ribbon out of him because every he would get the applause, and every time he came on, and the fans loved him, and that gave us a lift. So it's important to have that. You know, it's not about, like, one of the most important players for Dublin and their success and the start of their success was Kevin McManaman. You know, because he was able to provide that lift. You know, not just from his play, but when the fans came on, when the other players seen him, they said, this man's going to bring energy. And, you know, it never really worked out for him starting, but he was still, you know, so important to them, to Dublin going on to winning. And, you know, I think any team, you know, every team in that top table need that person coming on from the bench. It's so vital.
Yeah. And it is a difficult thing to do. Like, I always used to find you'd come on the game and it'd take you 10 minutes to even kind of get up to the level of game and get your second wind. Like, so some guys are just, I wouldn't say suited to it, but they just seem to have adapted to it, and they know they're able to get into that kind of routine and go up to the pace of it straight away. I think Kevin wasn't one of them, but it is a difficult thing to do when some players just aren't suited to it.
It's hard psychologically to get ready. And it's kind of opens up the argument too about this whole pre-match parade, where it's all focused on the 15, you know, the huddle before the game is focused on the first 15, and the game's gone completely away from that now. It's all about that 20, 24 players, and, you know, and I think before the game and, you know, the pre-match stuff should reflect that, and it's so narrow-minded just to keep it on the focus on the 15.
Yeah, and that is something. The way the game has gone for a long time now, to be fair, it's not about the 15, even though the 15 tend to get the focus, because you need to be finishing with as strong a 15 as you started with. And I think that'll be in Jack's thinking all the time. And Eamon, you mentioned it there about the fan favourite and giving the players a lift when the sub is coming on. I used to be fed that line as well, and I hated it. Oh no, you'll give the boys a lift. They're going, I don't mind the boys, they're start me,
just throw me in.
But just throw me in there from the start, give me a chance. But you're right, it does. Like, I remember even my ex-teammate saying that, you know, you come on, the crowd would get up, and it does give the team a lift. And as much as you don't like to be told it, it isn't. But I kept telling myself, you're an important role there, you have a great role to play. But it's needed the way the game is going. But I suppose going back to Cork quickly, there was a question I was asked there recently, would it be better suited for them to be in the Taltian Cup this year and build them up a bit of momentum? They're very young, they're very inexperienced, and I was torn on it. For most teams I'd say yes, Keith, but for Cork, and I always go back to the lack of love they get in Cork, the footballers, I think they need just even a win in the qualifiers, whereas I think even if they went a long way in the Taltian Cup, I don't think it would help them a whole pile.
Yeah, again, I'm the same as that. I think I'm kind of torn. I think I was listening to the Sunday game last night and they were asking the same question about Leitrim. I know they're different, look, obviously, Division 2 team and Division 4 team, but it's kind of hard to know. Like, I mean, you could look at a point of view, get a good run of the Taltian Cup, get to a final, get a day out. But it depends on the mentality of the players. Yeah. I think if the players wanted to be in the Taltian Cup and have a right run ahead, then yeah, that could be great for them. Get some confidence up, maybe win it. But like, if the players didn't want to be involved in that, didn't want to be bothered with it, then it's just going to be a waste of time. Whereas if they get it, like you said, a win or two in the qualifiers, even got back to Croke Park for a quarterfinal, that'd be seen as a good year for them.
Yeah,
and there's something to build on then next year. So it really does depend on the team and the group of players. But I think for Cork, definitely, I suppose they need to be getting a bit of a run in the qualifiers. Like I said, if they got to a quarterfinal, it's a positive year. So that has to be the route they want to go down. But I suppose time will tell whether they have that mentality or not.
Yeah.
You'd hope that they would, given the performance that we saw the last day.
Yeah, exactly. And I'd be with you on that one. I'm kind of torn on it. And they're hard to work out at the moment because they have a lot of ability. They need to come with that effort all the time. But they need to sort out the tactical side of things, because the heart and pride stuff might keep the score down against Kerry, but they need to be able to kick on and beat teams that they should be beating, really, which they haven't been doing over the last number of years. And
yeah, I just think on it though, I think the tactical stuff needs to kind of evolve and get better, but you know, it's probably easy for them to come out with that effort and go all guns blazing when it is a Kerry and it is a big local rival, and there was the whole thing about playing the game in Cork. I just think whether they can get themselves up for a qualifier game, regardless of who it's against, you know, like, I suppose that's probably they're in the position in the league, that they weren't able to bring that kind of same level of intensity and work rate and all that type of stuff to probably some of the league games that they need to bring some of the qualifier games. So that's probably, you don't want to question the mindset of any player really, but I suppose that's going to be the question for Cork really, is if they can bring that level to their next game and get the same level of performance.
Yeah, and unfortunately their performances haven't been good enough for quite a while, and that is why it's questioning. But look, I'm hopeful, to be honest, and it's not very often I'm hopeful for Cork, but I am hopeful that they can get the show back on the road, because, you know, it's all Cork people down in Glenbey in the summer, and all I hear all year is, we're a hurling county, but at the moment they're neither. So they need to sort it out. And look, before we move on to Donegal and Cavanaugh, and I just, from a Kerry side of things, you'd imagine they'll have a comfortable enough Munster final. Are they going to fall into the same trap that they've fallen into the last couple of years, where they're not really up to the speed of battle in going into the quarterfinal or semi-final, and they could get caught by a team who's gone through the qualifiers?
You know, I get what you're saying, and I would have kind of thought the same, but then I was thinking, Dublin have been the exact same way for years. They're coming out, and you know, Munster is better than Leinster, in my opinion. You know, Leinster is just...
Mine too, to be fair.
Leinster is... I don't even know... This is a watershed before pre-watershed, so I can't even say what I want to say about Leinster football, but it's just not good. And Dublin were coming out of that prime to go. So it's what Dublin did in the training ground. You know, the environment they created, the culture they created, you know, there was an awful lot of talk about A versus B. And that's what Kerry, you know, Kerry have been burned here before in terms of the prep. They haven't been road tested enough coming out of the Munster Championship. So Jack O'Connor needs to take that, or you like to think he has taken that on board and, you know, created that environment where, you know, you have the likes of Gini, David Moore pushing for them spots and creating that cutthroat environment where, you know, you slip up on training and your spot's gone, and that's what he needs to do, you know, because you go back to the league final, they didn't get enough of a chance in the league final, and it doesn't look they're going to be taken out of that, you know, get up to that top gear and get road tested until the quarterfinal, and you know, it's in training where they need to get at it.
Yeah, and look, I suppose this year the squad does look good enough that it will be fairly helter-skelter for all the AVB games. So it is a thing, and it's one of the things that impressed me most about Dublin over the last number of years. Like, you've seen Kerry get caught in games, you've seen Tyrone get caught, but you never see Dublin get caught by teams that shouldn't catch them. And it was always a mentality thing that they were always on the money. They kept doing the simple things better than everyone else. So, yeah, it'll be interesting. It's been a big test to Kerry. I think they have a sports psychologist this year, something that I've been crying out for them to get for the last number of years. And I think it's in the build-up to these games that you need it to keep fellas tuned in, that you don't go looking too far ahead, because I think that's caught Kerry, Keith. I think it's caught Kerry a few times in the last number of years.
Yeah, it has. And I think the point I was just going to make was you have to reference Dublin there. Like, I mean, I was actually thinking about this yesterday at the Galway Leitrim game and how Galway'd approach it. And it was just a case of they just stick to the process so well, regardless of who they were playing. They just went about their business and stuck to the game plan and did the right things. It didn't matter who got the scores, and there was no ego involved. And it was just they went out and they still ended up beating teams by 20 or 25 points without actually doing anything really, really flashy, you know, and that was kind of what stood to them. But on Kerry, look, if they can kind of get into that mindset again, is that they're priming themselves for a quarterfinal or semi-final, you know, then you'd imagine, like Jack, with all the experience he has of doing that before with Kerry in 04, 05, 06, whatever year it was, you know, he's kind of been there in similar positions before. So yeah. I think he'll have them in a good spot.
Just on the, I mentioned the sports psychologist there, Keith, and I'm not sure, like it's only since I retired that I started thinking more about that side of the game with Kerry, and we never used one. And I remember Jack Connor back in my first few years, 5, 6, and 7, whatever it was, he brought one in and your man was laughed out the door. We didn't really buy into it. And I genuinely feel that it cost us a lot of All-Irelands after. And this is hindsight now. And like, I don't know what this, did you use one in Mayo or?
Yeah, we would have used a few down through the years. And again, I suppose I'd have been similar to you in the fact that I think most teams probably in the early years were nearly that, not dismissive of them, but nearly wary yeah. of them. You weren't quite sure what they were going to bring to the table. No trust. I think there was probably plenty of them out there that kind of always went through the same kind of exercises to try and build that trust. And that probably didn't help either, you know. But I know when James came in 2011, he brought in Kieran Shannon with him. Now, Kieran wouldn't be, I suppose, a sports psychologist. You know, obviously, he's probably better known as a journalist yeah. with the Examiner there. But he did a lot of work with us on a kind of the conference side of things. And he was good in the fact that he just made it very practical. Like, he'd break it down into figures for you. And he'd look at kind of why this team can win and why that team can't win. And he'd kind of, and why you would do so well. And he actually just broke it down to real practical stuff. And that kind of worked really well for us at the time. And then when Stephen brought in, he had Niamh Fitzgerald in. Not Niamh Fitzgerald, sorry. But again, she'd worked with Wexford before, the hurlers, when they won the All-Ireland. And again, she was very good and she was different. And that was probably towards the kind of the end of stage of my career. And probably at that stage, you're probably thinking about the game a bit different as you get older, you know. Yeah. So I think, again, my thing on sports psychology is, like, I'm sure we've all seen stages where they bring in a sports psychologist and they do the exercise in front of a group of 30 or 35 people. But, like, not everyone in that group has the same mindset or thinks about the game in the same way. So it is a very individual thing, I think.
Yeah.
You know, it can't be a thing that you do in a group of 30 people and expect to get the same results out of everyone. It has to be done nearly on an individual basis of what works best for each of the players.
Yeah, I think you're right. And it has to be continuous. And to be honest, it's one of the things I actually regret not buying into more when I was playing. And I know, I think most teams went through the phase of reading all the books, Legacy and all these things. They were sweeping dressing rooms a bit, the bend, and hoping that that'd be the difference. But it doesn't work that way. You have to buy into it. There's no point doing training the muscles if you're not going to train the brain. And look, that's a podcast for another day. I know, Eamon, you're itching to talk about the Donegal-Cavan game. You predicted 6 or 7 points and you were spot on. Pressure was on after that prediction.
The one prediction I got right in about 3 years now. Yeah. So I'll take it. No, I just thought that I didn't predict Cavan to put up as much resistance. And I'll be honest with you, I was very nervous at halftime, the way it was panning out and the way that Donegal just were that wee bit sloppy and just didn't seem to be on it. And, you know, I text one of the lads and I said, surely to God, Cavan can't catch us twice here in the space of, you know, 3 years. But thankfully, we pulled away in the end. And, you know, it came back to your own motto, just get the ball in. And, you know, there was no wide side and the ball went in, and that's the, you know, we got the breaks from it.
Yeah, Keith, Cavan were unbelievably impressive, and it kind of just, I can't understand how they managed to drop down to Division 4. Their style of football was great to watch, the standard of footballers. And if they'd taken their goal chances, like Patton made one incredible save, it should have been on Match of the Day, never mind the Sunday game. Like, if they'd taken one of them chances, all of a sudden that pressure is on Donegal again. And as Eamon said, that thought is coming into the head, are they going to catch us for the second time in 3 years? So Cavan will probably feel it was an opportunity lost or opportunity missed.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a couple of things kind of stood out for me on it. I think you mentioned one there is that the quality of play of some of the Cavan boys, particularly in the first half, their kick passing was so good. They looked to go long at times, and, you know, I think it was a trademark of some of the Kerry teams back 10 or 15 years ago was that diagonal ball into the edge of the square, and they got some good scores out of it. But you mentioned there the goal chance things was for James Smith just before half time or 5 minutes before half time, and I know Patton made a save, but if that goes in, Cavan win maybe 3 points up rather than being a level game, and the second half is completely different. But I just think, I think it was 9-0 at half time, and just Kerry just, or sorry, Donegal just seemed to take a bit of sting out of the game in the second half. They seemed to play the game at more of their own tempo. You know, I think it was 15 points to 14 with 10 minutes to go. You know, so there was a lot less scores, and Donegal just seemed to play the game at their own pace and really take the sting out of the Cavan attack. And I think that was probably the win of the game for them. And like I said, a bit lucky with the goal.
Yeah.
But once that went in, it was game over with 10 minutes to go, you know. So look, you'd be impressed with some of the stuff Cavan did for a lot of that game. And you'd imagine they'd be, I suppose, red hot favourites now to go on and win the Tailteann Cup.
Yeah, and I suppose, Eamon, I don't know if you see the Sunday game, and Gooch mentioned it, the lack of, I suppose, a long kicking into forwards at the moment. Mostly, I agree with him anyway. He's on about, like, there's an over-analysing of games, and the buzzword turnovers, this, turnovers. I think people are afraid to kick the ball in long and leave the forward work for it and see, can he win a ball that's maybe 60-40 or 50-50 or whatever. And the two balls that Donegal went put in, they were probably shots, but it just shows the panic. For the first goal, Michael Murphy's inside there. He actually doesn't go for it, but there's such panic. The two Cavan defenders and the goalie go for it, and it was a great finish, no, in fairness. But I'll go to you after, Keith, but like maybe later on the show, like, that's my thing with Aidan Shea, put him in there and the panic it can cause. And Eamon, it just shows that you put in a couple of balls, even the second one, it was another missed shot. Just panic. And Donegal benefited from it.
Yeah, and that's the thing. There's two things, you know, I feel that we get kind of get caught up with in the modern game, or whatever way you want to call the modern game or whatever it is. But there's two things.
Yeah.
There's this talk about percentages, you know, percentages, possession, and keep possession. And to a degree, you know, I'm with that. But if you become risk averse, it's no good to anybody. You know, and the second thing is that, and Keith will back me up on this here, you know, sometimes you boys inside, Darren, you just want the ball handed to you. You just don't want the dirty ball in, Nick. And That's the way I feel.
You're slagging now.
Sorry, no.
You wouldn't say that if you were in the studio sitting beside me. You're a way sounder.
No, I'm up in Donegal. So I'm safe enough. But no, there's a lot of forwards, you know, you have to hand the ball to them. And yeah, then, you know, they'll start giving out, give me a good ball. But we've got to, you just get the ball in. And if the ball goes in, you've got to tell the forward just what won that ball. It doesn't matter if it's high or low. And just at least go for it. Because as we've seen yesterday, there's a percentage of, you know, something comes out of it. And, you know, some teams, you know, we hear have this thing, there's a 1-4. So every 4 attacks, you get the ball in. You know, every 5 attacks, you get the ball in. Something, if you see the mismatch, you know, you go back to the team you played with. If Donaghy's sitting in there with a small man, you see a mismatch, no sweeper, you get the ball in. But now some teams are so reluctant to kick that they're not even doing that when the mismatch is on. You know, they don't even have that ratio. So we've got to find that balance instead of stupidly kicking and just, you know, get the odd ball in there.
Yeah, and like that, look, as a forward, you always like the handy ball that's more or less bouncing outside you or somebody does hand it to you. But, and you mentioned the team that I played in, and obviously Donny's the one everyone talks about, but Cullum, like Gooch, had incredible hands, and Keith, you would have marked him an awful lot, and we used to put in a lot of high balls to him as well. And when I say high balls or long balls, they're aimed at him and they're properly put in. And like I put up on Twitter last night, I had a lot of people come back to me about keeping possession and not turning, and I was there going, but you have to take a chance, otherwise you're just back and forth across the field. And my thing is, if I put a ball in, let's say Keith, you're in the full back line, put the ball in and you win it ahead of the forward, you have 140 yards or whatever it is, 120 yards to get the ball up to get a score. Whereas if you turn me over 50, 60 yards from your goal, it's a lot shorter. It's only one kick pass in then yourself or a run. I can never understand the safe option all the time.
Yeah, that was exactly the point I was going to make. I mean, if I'm playing in cornerback and I see our lads with the ball out in the middle of the field, I'd rather them lose the ball by kicking it into the opposition full forward or full back line and having them try to turn it over from there rather than lose on the halfway line. And like I said, you'd be under pressure straight away. So there is that part of it. You know, you go back to the Goose there, he he was very good in the air as well. I think everyone probably, one of the most famous goals is that one in the 0-4 final against when he's marking Pat Kelly and he catches it over his head and just burns him. But I think a lot of it comes down to the players that are on the ball as well out the field. I think a lot of the time, like I said, it's so risk averse. Players are afraid to even look up for that pass in because it's not an option. You know, you see so many times a player gets the ball and his first instinct is to look sideways or look back. They're not even looking forward for that kick pass in. And because of that, then players inside are probably not even making the run.
Yeah.
You know, I think we've probably highlighted a good bit with Dublin during the league. The league is at the full forward line, probably weren't showing for it. But the way their game had evolved, it was like they rarely looked to kick the ball in unless Conn was in there.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, there is two parts of it. There is the whole thing of if management are kind of looking at stats more so when they try to, when they do turn over the ball. But you need the right players on the ball to kick the ball in as well. Like, I mean, you talk about having Aiden in there. And we tried it a few times, and then there was times when we probably got too predictable and we're probably looking to try and put in all the time, and players just our teams copped onto it, and they sat as a sweeper in front of them, and other times in the ball was just lumped in. There was no real kind of pattern to it. Whereas, again, you mentioned the Kerry team back in the day, it was always a case of nearly got the ball to the wings and it was a diagonal ball in on top of Donaghy, and that was so effective for them. So there's a couple of bits to it. Yeah, the whole stats thing, but you need the right players. And Cavan had good ball players there yesterday. And they were able to kick a good ball into full forward line. They got some good results out of it.
Yeah, and you actually mentioned it there. You know, when players get it, their first instinct is to actually look sideways or backwards. And it just reminded me of a moment in the Kerry Cork game. And I can't think of the player. He caught a mark. Nice bit out, but he caught the mark. And I thought, right, this tough old shot, but at least it's a shot. He caught the mark and kicked it backwards. About 40 yards backwards.
You could hear the crowd just moaning on it when he did it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and I know he was trying to keep the ball. I was like, going, what was the point of calling that mark? At least if you catch it and you're not going to shoot from there, take him on or something. But look, I suppose Cavan will be happy in the sense that, look, they've won Division 4, and they put up a great performance. Probably at this point, they maybe could have won it. They'd probably be feeling they should have won it if they got the goals. But will they approach the Tailteann Cup, do you reckon, with the right attitude that we're all hoping that teams will do? Because it's another chance to get into Croke Park, another chance to get silverware. And for me, like, I would be backing them. If they go in with the right attitude, they could be collecting two pieces of silverware in Croke Park this year, and it sets them up nicely to build on it for next year.
You would hope that Cavan go, that's the way they go about the business. And I think the way Mickey Graham is and the way he operates is that they will. Because for the life of me, I can't understand how they're playing Division 4. And they're a team that really frustrate me. Because there's so much potential there. You know, they're firing out good players, but they just can't seem to do it. You know, really, really push on. Some people, you know, argue the point that they're all about championship. Now, that argument's gone dead and buried, because you can't have a good championship consistently without having playing in the top divisions, and that's been borne out this last few years now. So silverware, a bit of more game time, you know, within that environment, that county environment, build more, you know, camaraderie. They're all the benefits of going at the Tailteann Cup and go again for Ulster next year. Build and keep building.
Yeah.
So definitely, there's so many advantages to going for the Tailteann Cup for every team that's in it. And the disadvantage is, you know, someone has to point out to me one good disadvantage of going for a Tailteann Cup.
Yeah. And I suppose, Keith, from a Donegal point of view, I'm still unsure at Donegal. I can't quite work them out. I think in the last couple of years, I'm looking at the team and I'm going, yeah, they could be pushing. They could be or should be pushing. And even though they won the last, I still didn't think they showed that consistency. And every game they pass, I'm going, one more game now and they'll show me now that they should be in the conversation. And I suppose they're in the Ulster final, no matter who they come up against, Monaghan or Derry. I think it's going to be a case of, I still don't know what Donegal's going to show up. So I don't know how you feel about them. Are they in that conversation for the bigger prize?
Yeah, it's funny you should say that. Like, the last couple of years, I was like that. I was always thinking they're potential All-Ireland contenders, you know, they could go far. And yet every time the last couple of years, they kind of let you down. And I backed Armagh actually in the first game. When I kind of tipped Armagh to beat them the first day, just because of that, because they kind of nearly flattered to deceive a good bit over the last couple of years. But look, they have good players there. What frustrates me about them is the style of play, I suppose. It just seems so slow, ponderous, very lateral, trying to get them, the guys cutting in from the sideline. And when it works, and it does work at times, it's very good. But they just seem to be very, very one-dimensional, I think, and trying that same thing over and over again.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of commentary out there that it's, a lot of it is down to the way the club football is up in Donegal. So I don't know if Eamon might want to comment on that a bit more, but like, it just seems to be that they don't seem to be able to change it up a bit. You know, I think they might have kicked two or three balls into Murphy in the second half when he went in full forward, and you know, I think maybe might have got one score off them, but they looked like they could be dangerous if they tried to do it a bit more consistently. But they just seem to be kind of stuck in that kind of game plan, and that for me is the frustrating part.
Yeah, Eamon, are you contenders? Are you still trying to find your form?
I'm going to be biased here. You know, Neil's still wouldn't be involved. Neil's babysitting for me during this week, so. I'm gonna have to be kind here now. But obviously, you know, I'm a wee bit biased. I know the potential, I know the quality that's in the group. And I do believe, because when you see what Tyrone have done last year, then I believe that Donegal are as good and if not better than that. So I think that Donegal can win it all out. Whether they do or not, I don't know. There's still, you know, a few question marks over in terms of how they approach games, and the way they play. But I do believe that they have the potential of winning All-Ireland.
I think as well, like you mentioned, they look like they have very good footballers, but they just look like they're never let play. Do you know what I mean? It just seems to be that they're just stuck in that same format all the time of carrying the ball, looking for the cuts, looking for the different runners off shoulders at different angles, whereas you just get the impression that sometimes if they were just let play a bit more football, they could actually be a bit more dangerous. But look, that's just...
Yeah, and if you watched the game yesterday, if you rewatched, in the second half, it wasn't necessarily the big lump in or the diagonal ball. It was that wee dink ball to the D. You know, Murphy showed, I think it's twice or three times, laid it off, and that brought a lot of joy. And it's something we don't see enough, where you're looking up from the halfway or from the half back line, and you're just playing that dink ball into the type of link man. And you know, that's definitely something we need to bring into the Donegal play more.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I always find that little dink ball, especially if you're the one actually kicking it and going, because what you're doing is you're making the defender face his own goals. You can go left and right. And Tyrone's goal against Fermanagh, Conor McKenna was involved and hit the post. But that's what it came from, a handy pop ball, and came at pace, and his shot hit the post. I can't remember who finished it, but it all comes from actually turning defenders with a little pop ball. And as a full forward, you're literally just catching it and looking for runner left and right. But I suppose down to Connacht, Keith, and you had Galway, Leitrim from a huge mismatch, a game that probably didn't do either team much good. But another indication of why this Tailteann Cup is so important for the likes of Leitrim now, not to be finishing on a low, that they can go into a competition amongst each teams of more of their standard, and they can try and build on it, because to finish a season on that kind of defeat is very tough for any team or any players.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, before the game, I suppose Andy would probably be hoping that if they could keep it competitive for 60 minutes, you know, keep it to maybe 10-12 points, that'd be a good result for them, and they'd have something to build on. Like, again, the first 25 minutes, they were fairly okay. They were set up really well. They were getting numbers back, but they were really looking to try and keep three players up front. And when they did win the ball back, they were looking to move it as quick as they could. Like, Donal Rinn was impressive around the middle. Like, he'd drift into full forward then once they got ahead, and they'd try and put a few high balls in on top of him as well. So you could see what they were trying to do. But once Galway got on top, probably the last 10 minutes before halftime and complete in the second half, and we mentioned conditioning before with Cork, Kerry, but it was definitely noticeable that yesterday for Leitrim, you know, they completely ran out of steam in the second half. And once they couldn't win their own possession and goal, we just held on to the ball the whole second half, and they were just cutting through them then. So disappointing one the way it finished, particularly with the scoreline. But for Leitrim, you know, the Tailteann Cup perhaps has to be a big game for them. It has to be something that they'd look to kind of put a real push on. And again, mentioned it before, but it depends really what attitude Andy can get out of the boys for those games.
Yeah, I mean, it was 12-5 at halftime, and when you see the score, it's goals. And in fairness, like, I'm not comparing Kerry and Cork to Galway and Leitrim, but Cork managed to keep the goals out. And I think when the goals start going in, it's just a sucker punch, and then another one comes soon after, and it just makes everything more difficult. So look, it's not what you want to see, I suppose, but like, I heard they were giving out about it on the Sunday game as well, but I don't think there's any answer to it. Like, I think most counties do like the provincial championships. It's in terms of playing it doesn't have to be the main thing, but Leitrim do have to play the likes of Mayo, Galway, Roscommon. Like, it's just Connacht is actually very strong at the moment, so it's very hard to avoid these kind of these hidings that they're going to get. But the main thing is that they do approach the Tailteann Cup with the right attitude.
Yeah, and again, you know, the Tailteann Cup, you'd hope, like, Keith will probably know more here now, but the type of Andy, he's going to go at it 100%. You'd hope the players rowing behind him. But the whole thing, it's the provincial system. You know, how this is a road to the All-Ireland qualifiers, you know, baffles me. And we can have this, in fact, we have had this argument year in, year out. And we want change now, but unfortunately, you know, change comes slowly. And it's just going to have to, we're going to have a few more of these results for another few years until, you know, that structure change comes in. And again, I love the provincial system. And, you know, give the likes of Leitrim, whoever else in the other provinces, give them a go at it. But do not have it as part of the path in All Ireland, because it's just so unbalanced, and it's just not fair. And I mean that with utmost respect. It's not fair that Mayo will have to, you know, if Mayo were to progress in All Ireland final, if Kerry were to progress in All Ireland final, you know, you're playing potentially Leitrim, you're playing Limerick. You know, it's just like this, us up in Ulster, we would have to. Tougher route to get to that All-Ireland final through the provincial system as it is now. And I just think it needs to be worked on.
Yeah, they definitely need to change it up. I'll be honest, I don't know. I don't know the answer. I'm not going to claim to know the answer. I still think the system at the moment is wrong, and I still find it funny, this split season crack, and it's all directed amongst club players, and then people tend to forget that all the county boys are club players, and as soon as they finish with Mayo or Donegal or Kerry a week later, they're going to be going into club championship. And if they have a good year, their season is 12 months of the year. But look, I genuinely don't know. I think Pat Spillane came out with a fairly raving statement the weekend about splitting the hurling and the football, which, look, I don't know what he was thinking. But look, it got tongues wagging, and that seems to be half the battle these days. But yeah, I suppose with the under-20s... didn't get a chance myself to see Kildare and Sligo, but it showed Kildare are on the up. It's been a great year for them. And unfortunately for Kerry, Tyrone caught us again. It seems to be a running team with us. But it was a good game of football. And Eamon, you put up a tweet last night about we're going to have two sublime candidates. There you go. It's like, I'd heard a lot of talk about Rory, hadn't seen much of him, but yeah, it's not great. It's kind of frightening, really. You're gonna have two of them to deal with now in a couple of years.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing. It's funny because I had a debate with a Tyrone lad 2 weeks ago in terms of he was saying that Rory's going to be the best of them, and I said,
better than the father.
Better than the father's. He's going to be the best Canavan now. I don't know when he included the father, but he just said he's going to be the best Canavan.
No, look, we're going to have it all over Twitter and social media. Eamon McGee has built up Rory to be better than the father.
No, retract that statement. Retract that statement. But no, he's a serious talent. You know, I would have been involved with the Donegal under-20s this year, and we would have had a wee look at him, and... he can do a lot. He is so much in the locker in terms of what he can bring to the game, in terms of scoring ability, and it's just a daunting prospect. Whatever Tyrone are doing, they're just able to fire out, you know, these players year in, year out.
Yeah, and Ed McLennan in, he was wearing 14, but my God, he was a unit. He was around the middle there, and look, I suppose for Kerry point of view, we just struggled maybe with the intensity, and we could probably lose hand pass cost us, and there's talks now in Kerry, do we need to check out the underage, because obviously we've done quite well in minor level, and do you know, focus comes into 20, we're not winning anything. And I don't know what your opinions are on it, but when it comes to the under 20 age group, I'm more looking at, can I pick out two or three lads who in a year or two will be in the seniors, more importantly than actually winning the competition. And some people don't or won't agree with that, but for me, I'm looking at more, right, it's great to win the silverware underage, but can I pick out a few of these lads who in a year or two will be ready to step up to senior level? I'm not sure, Keith, do you be looking at the same when you're watching Mayo? And I know they got beaten by Sligo and it was probably a bit of a shock, but would you pick out a few of the Mayo lads?
There's always that argument, you know, whether the under 17, under 20 is for developing players or is it for winning, you know? And I think obviously you want to be bringing through a couple of players every year just to bolster that kind of senior panel to kind of bring that bit of freshness to it. But at the same time, I think you want to have a team that's competitive then as well at under 17 or 2011 and is competing for Lawrence, because, you know, it is a great experience. Like, we won the under 21 and 06. I think, like, out of that starting 15, I think 10 or 11 of that team actually went on to play senior for Mayo. So, you know, there's kind of an argument for both, and there is a bit of both to it. Personally, though, I suppose I prefer to see the under 20 going back to under 21.
I
think that year makes a big difference to the development physically to players as well. Like, you look at young Canavan there. Is he still in school?
Yeah,
what age is he?
I think he's still in school.
You know, so like, he's obviously going to be playing under 20 for another 2 years. Like, will he be brought into a senior setup next year? I don't know. Is he a bit young for that yet? Is he physically ready for that yet? It's hard to know. Whereas you look at the full forward there for Tyrone, I said he'd be well able for it. Yeah. But, you know, you have that disparity, I suppose, at that age. So, yeah, look, it is always going to be an argument whether it is for developing players and bringing players through. But at the same time, I think if counties can get that mixture of both, then you're doing something right. Because, you know, you look at the Galway hurlers. I mean, they were winning minors under 21s for years, but yet struggle to bring them players through to a senior setup and win senior All-Ireland. So obviously that's not, winning under 21s and minors isn't the be-all and end-all, but I suppose there is a kind of a mixture of kind of getting the two right.
Yeah, so Tyrone and Kildare will be next week. Surely it'll be a good game. I've seen more of Tyrone and they do look very impressive, and Sean Kavanagh's naming off Cush and Canavan and McLennan, and all their fathers played for Tyrone. So they come from a good bloodline and stuff. So it'll be a good game. And like that, I'd love to see Kildare win it, just because it'll help the county and the momentum and hopefully bring a few more players and make Kildare a bit more competitive. But I suppose we've got a few more topics to talk about as well. And I didn't want to finish the show without talking about the AIB Club Player of the Year, Kilcoo's Eamon Brannigan. He had an interview during the week. I can only describe it as naive and maybe the inexperience of media and how it works, but he came out with a statement about Down football and they don't have a winning mentality and how he has no interest in Down football. And he was very dismissive of all the Down footballers, really, their attitude, the direction they're going, the management team. And I tweeted about it, how it was a strange interview, one I think he'll regret. Eamon, I'll go to you first. What were your thoughts on it? I couldn't understand it, to be honest, for a fellow who's never been in a county dressing room to be so dismissive. And I know Kilcoo have had a great couple of years and brilliant last year, but it was a bit much.
I probably would have been the same. And, you know, we have to be kind of respectful to the young lad, because I don't know him personally, from what I understand, he's good, he's genuine. And, you know, the interview was honest, but, you know, for me, it was just full of notions in terms of, you know, about the club game and where it's at. And, you know, it's as if it's a standard above the county, you know, that sort of brought to me, you know, that a lot of them Kilcoo players were in the county setup before. And Brannigan, you have to remember, wasn't, and he's never been in the Down senior setup for so for him to comment on that, you know, it was so disrespectful to the group. And if he felt so strongly, why does he not go up and help change the culture? Why does he not take the good habits that he's learned in the Kilcoo dressing room and, you know, take them into the down setup? And I see a lot of that stuff in terms of the club, you know, county football is a better product. That's my own. There's a lot of good stuff on the club game, but overall, it's not a good product as county football. And you know, you have to remember that the standard isn't the same. And you know, a lot of people say, "No, the county game is worse at." I love the club game. I love the county game, but there's definitely, you know, for Brannigan to come out and say it, that it's just a bit delusional, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Keith, what you make of it? I think we all love the club game, but like we're all club players, and then we go into county, and there's a massive jump in standard, no matter what anyone says.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, I don't know the fella. Obviously, he had a good year for Kilcoo. Like, I've seen a lot of the games, and I suppose Kilcoo's style of play leaves a kind of split opinion a lot of the times, but he did play very well for them all year. Maybe it's just down to this, nearly you kind of get the opinion that Kilcoo nearly had this kind of siege mentality built up all year, the last couple of years, that with the world against them, they're getting criticised for the way they play, and maybe that's just kind of carrying forward from that, isn't that he's just sticking up for that, and that's all they can see is really Kilcoo. But look, it is what it is. From my point of view, look, I played a lot of hurling for Mayo when you know you're probably not going to be competing for winning All-Irelands or Christy Rings or anything like that. So a lot of the time, it's not about, just because teams aren't really competitive, it's not a lack of a winning mentality. They still have that effort there. They still put in, they go training two or three times a week. They go to the gym. They want to be out there. They're proud. They're representing their county. So, you know, a lot of the time for me, it's not all about winning mentality. There's a lot more to it than just that.
To be fair, it's hard to put it better than that, Keith. So, yeah, look, like I said at the start, I think when he reflects on it, he'll probably regret it. I think it's one of the ones where you start talking and sometimes you don't realise the words are coming out of your mouth, and maybe things were taken out of context or whatever. So look, we'll have to give him benefit of doubt, and hopefully, look, it was only 12 years ago Down were in an All-Ireland final, and they have good footballing people up there. I'm sure this interview will have hurt a lot of fellas, and I hope it did, and I'd like to see him give a good crack at the Tailteann Cup, and maybe he might rethink his lack of interest in Down and maybe come on board and, like you said, aim and help change the culture up there and get him back to winning ways.
Exactly, and you know, and I say that criticism, many's a car crash interview I gave Down throughout the years, so I can't be too harsh. You know, many's the time I landed in the dressing room on Tuesday and the boys are just saying, "Would you ever just shut up, McGee?" Which so
well, I think you look at what Derry have done this year. Even, I mean, it's not so long ago they were down Division 4 a couple of years ago. Like, you get someone involved in the team who's able to kind of get everyone together, whatever way they have to get inside the mindset, get the best players in the panel. As Eamon mentioned there, you get a run or two in the league or whatever, and it consolidates the squad. You get everyone singing off the right hymn sheet, and you look what it can do. So, you know, if Down could do something like that, there's no reason why they couldn't come back up to the divisions and maybe someday put in a kind of a good run in the Ulster Championship as well.
And so this weekend, more action coming. It's actually amazing, the amount of sport on every weekend. You wouldn't want to have anything else going on with the amount of it we have to watch. But I'm going to try and get your predictions. Eamon, I'm going to go with you first for Leinster. You have Meath versus Dublin, Kildare versus Westmeath. I think we all were hoping it might be neutral venues, but they're in Croke Park. Are there any upsets coming?
Yeah, Dublin and Kildare in the Leinster final there.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Keith. Are you going to go along with that?
Yeah, you have to. Look, you'd love to be able to sit here and say that there's going to be two kind of really close and competitive games there, but you can't look past the two that mentioned are Dublin and Kildare there, unfortunately.
And I'm going to stay with you, Keith. I think Ulster, it's going to be a difficult one. I find very hard to call this one. I'm a good man for sitting on the fence. Derry versus Monaghan.
Yeah, I think if you just keep using the line, it's hard to call, you'd be all right. But again, look, if we mentioned Derry there, like, there was a bit of talk about them as well last year. They were a coming team, and they seem to be kind of living up to that. I mean, in fairness, the performance against Tyrone was really, really good. They're stuck to their game plan. You know, again, there's questions already been asked about Monaghan in the last couple of years, but in fairness, they kind of answered them most of the times and came within a point or 2 points of beating Tyrone in the Ulster final last year. So it is a very hard one to call. I'll stick my neck out and go with Derry.
Fortune favours the brave. Derry's gone for it. Well, typical of Eamon, I ask him for his opinion, and Derry versus Monaghan jumps ship, and I know for a fact he's going to blame it on a technical issue, but he just wasn't brave enough to give his call on it. He was playing the cute Kerry Hoare, I think, but he was doing it the Donegal way. I'm going to stick my neck out and I'm going to go with Monaghan. I think after seeing Derry the last day, it's hard to actually back or go against him. But I think Monaghan, whenever the questions are asked to them, they normally stand up and they answer them. Especially this year, we all expected Dublin to beat them and to send Monaghan down, but they dug deep and they always seem to pull it out of the hat. And either way, I think we're going to be in for a good Ulster final. What do you reckon, Keith?
Yeah, like I said there, the last couple of years, whether it was Galway last year in the league, Dublin this year in the league, they just seem to be able to pull them vital scores out of it. But again, just watching the Derry-Tyrone game, and I know Tyrone were a bit all over the place and a bit out of sorts, but you know, I just think if they have their homework done right again and they can kind of, I suppose, stifle a few of the Monaghan forwards, they could be in with a right good chance. So yeah, look, it should be a good game. It'll probably be very tactical and I'm sure a lot of bodies behind the ball, but hopefully it'll be entertaining side as well.
Yeah, well, we're guaranteed to be in for a weekend of good action again next weekend. And unfortunately, that's all we have time for in today's show. A big thanks to my regular partner in crime, Em McGee, who jumped ship when we needed him most. And to Mayo's Keith Higgins, thanks very much for joining us today, Keith. Hope you enjoyed it and hopefully we'll have you back on soon.
Great stuff, lads. Yeah, thanks very much.
You're listening to the GAA Hour with Darren O'Sullivan on Sports Joe.
The final whistle is all over. Jim Gavin, Jason Sherlock embrace. Dublin are the history makers.
Today, Sean Kavanagh, who is a brilliant footballer. But I tell you what, you can forget about Sean Kavanagh as far as he's a man.
O'Sullivan, oh, that was absolutely brilliant. What about that for skill from Darren O'Sullivan?
Kieran McCall, it's high, it's over! Will he ever get a more vital one than that?
The transition talk, I think Joe Bradley told us the production line was finished in Kerry. Well, Joe Bradley, what do you think of that?
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kyler Tsinis.
I'm Kayla Tsinis and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.